This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I am your host, Jared Turner. And don't you just hate it when people answer their own questions? I do. My co-host is John Pazden, and he thinks it's bad luck to be superstitious. Let's get to it. Hey guys, this is Jared Turner joining you from Utah here in the United States.
And I'm John Pazden. I am in Shanghai, China. Hi, everybody.
Joel, John, I'm looking forward to this discussion today. We have an interesting topic that is always kind of in my area of interest and focus.
Yeah, so today we're going to do one of those episodes where we look at one of these academic papers and we pull out some of the more interesting points that we think are relevant to you language learners out there, you Chinese learners, and hopefully you will find these useful.
So this comes from a research paper from Carol Morgan from the University of Durham. And it's titled Attitude Change in Foreign Language Culture Learning.
So we're talking about attitudes, and not just attitudes, but also attitudes towards the culture of the language that you're learning. And before we get into this, I want to say that some of these ideas might seem a little obvious, but for that reason, you might never have thought about them before, or you probably have never imagined that some of this stuff has already been subject to research. Some of it, like way back in the 70s, and this paper gets into all kinds of stuff about that. So we're going to cover the highlights.
All right, let's get into it.
So in this podcast, we've talked quite a bit about the importance of motivation, how it, you know, really helps your language learning. And this paper wants to bring in, it mentions motivation, but it also wants to bring in attitude towards the target language culture. And if you have motivation and you have a good attitude towards that target language culture, it's going to have a really positive effect in your language acquisition. And so you have like the two sides. If you have this really positive attitude, then you're going to learn faster. And then if you have kind of a negative attitude, then you're not going to learn so well.
I think just for the purpose of our podcast, right, that's going to be in general people's perception towards China or Chinese culture or culture in Taiwan or perhaps culture in how you may be interacting with that those people from those cultures in your home country.
Yeah, and you can imagine that this topic kind of caught my interest because, you know, in recent years, there have been some negative vibes about China in particular, and Chinese is as interesting as ever. But if you have negative vibes towards the target culture, that can affect your interest in the language. Jared, I think you actually have some research on this, right?
That's right. I was reading a paper just this last week on this. And right now, geopolitical relations between China and the West are not that good. And it was a recent, I think, a Pew Research survey. They track this type of stuff like every year. And in the United States, 80% of the population has a negative view of China. And consequently, about 80% of Chinese have a negative view of the United States at this time. And I think it's pretty similar for European countries. So it's a bit of a difficult time right now for these type of relations and perceptions of between the two cultures.
Yeah, and this paper kind of mentions two things. One is that if you're a successful learner, then you can't help but learn some culture along with the language. And as you learn that culture, it will kind of slowly give you a more positive outlook on the target language culture. And then at the same time, if you have a more positive outlook on that foreign culture, then it's going to help your learning. So I think both of those would be nice. Although at this point in, you know, geopolitical relations, maybe you people that are learning Chinese, you're especially important because you can remind the rest of the world that there are good things to appreciate about this foreign culture that's kind of getting a bad rap right now.
Reminds me of a quote, John, it's hard to hate up close. So I think it's you learn of another culture, you know, it's a little closer.
Actually, this paper mentions exactly that point. They're talking about a study that was done, a sociology thing, where a Chinese couple were looking for lodging in different hotels and they didn't report any racism. But when they sent letters to the hotels and asked about, like, do they accept visiting Chinese guests, then they were much more likely to get negative responses. And their explanation was, in general, it's easy to hold a prejudice. But when in a very specific case, you know, someone needs help, you're probably not going to be rude for no reason, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, so getting back to the whole culture thing, one of the interesting points that I liked that was brought up in this paper is that culture also has this concept of I plus one. And we've talked about I plus one before, you know, Krashen and his theory on language acquisition. I is input and it's comprehensible input, meaning you can understand it. And then plus one means just a little bit above your, you know, comfortable level.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense because you are going to be learning about, well, anything. I mean, in this instance, language and culture, right? You know, just inundate someone with all the aspects of the culture. Oh, you need to know this. All that is, oh, this is interesting. No, it's kind of just like a little bit at a time and you get kind of exposure to it as you go along.
Yeah, so you start with the more common things, the small differences, and then you build from there as their language proficiency builds at the same time.
Well, John, I think something that I really liked about this paper, and I think one of the things that stood out to me the most is how they're talking about the presenter, the person who is introducing you to the language or teaching. So in this sense, it's really a teacher. Who's teaching you? Do you have a tutor? Do you have a teacher, a language partner? The person who's actually helping you learn the language and about their impact on your attitude and your motivation for learning the language. And I think this is something inherent we all know. A common question is like, hey, who was your favorite teacher? And many people can think back on a teacher that they had in school or have now, who they really enjoyed, who really inspired something inside of them. And you know, they really maybe fell in love with the topic or decided maybe even to pursue a career or whatever based on the influence of a teacher. And the teacher can be very important in your attitude and your motivation to go ahead and learn something. And they really hit this kind of head on, but they do break it down into a few different areas. So yeah, they talk about, hey, the teacher, and it's even basic things about how they look, right?
Yeah, so that was one of the things that I found kind of funny about this paper is that they totally admit that when the teacher is physically attractive, then it really helps the students' attitudes towards, you know, the target culture and the language and all that stuff. Which, you know, we kind of know, but, you know, this is an academic paper saying this.
They actually cited some paper that was published on this. So I too thought that was pretty funny.
And I like how they mentioned that, like, the teacher being innovative in the classroom also really helps. There's kind of a shock value, which they mention is risky, or that maybe professional teachers might not want to do that. But, you know, it made me think of, like, bunch of kindergartners that go to school and then suddenly one day the teacher brought a guinea pig and they're all freaking out and having the time of their lives, you know. And innovative teachers try to create cool experiences in the classroom as well.
And, you know, something that is interesting, I would say that I'll bring this up because I have encountered this with different teachers and different scenarios in classrooms. But they talk about, hey, how they're presenting, right? But some of the, I guess, the methods, you would say, how a teacher is trying to get their students to learn. And specifically, they're talking about teachers that use threats, coercion, fear creating, that type of stuff, and how that has a negative impact on the attitude towards learning and towards, I mean, yeah, duh. But you think about it. I remember, John, when I was in school, yeah, sometimes, you know, a teacher would threaten, oh, if you don't learn this, then that's going to happen, or, you know, you're going to fail or whatever. I guess it's even a reminder to me because sometimes I might say some of those things to my kids, you know, make sure you focus on your grades so you can get into good college, or you may not, you know, get any scholarships or whatever, right? But it's a reminder that, hey, those things do not help your motivation and your attitude towards learning.
Yeah. And, you know, when I think about my time studying Japanese in Japan, there are two teachers that I remember the most clearly. You know, this was when I was like 20 years old, right? One of them was a really attractive teacher and the other one was a really funny teacher. And I learned a lot.
So I think overall what they're saying here is that, hey, if you are having a positive experience with the language, then you're going to be more interested in learning it. Ah, surprise, surprise.
And they mentioned one particular method which can be used to trick students into adjusting their attitude towards the target culture. I'm talking about role play.
Role play. Wow. All right.
Yes, role play. Let me just read this quote real quick. Role playing, where it was revealed that playing out a role, provided that coercion was not employed, encouraged people to shift their attitudes to accommodate the new stance. Active participation helps to focus attention and the dissonance experienced internally may be accommodated by change in attitude.
Well, that is interesting, and I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, so there might be some aspects of communication which seems really weird, but when you have the students like act them out and try to understand why people are saying things like this and act them out, it does actually help them adjust their attitude towards the target culture, which then helps their language acquisition. And I actually have one thing to say about this, which is not a classroom thing, but some of my experiences in China. You might have had this experience too, Jared, but you know how like in China, or when you're learning Chinese, you learn that people ask you 吃过了吗? Instead of just saying hi.
Yeah.
And like, it takes you a while for you to accept. They don't really care that much if you have eaten or not. It's just kind of what they say to greet you. And so I remember when I like finally got it through my head, I don't have to tell them if I've eaten or not. I don't have to think about, you know, what I have for lunch or whatever. I'm not going to have a conversation about that. I just play this role of using this weird line to greet or respond to a greeting. The beginning, I felt like I was kind of role playing, like, oh, you're doing that thing. Oh, okay, I'll do that thing back. And like, I felt like I was playing a role, like it was so fake, because it was fake for me. But when you fake it enough, you do eventually internalize it, and then it's not weird anymore. So that's kind of like my own real life role playing, where I kind of made a connection with this point.
I like that. I like that.
Did you do that too?
You know, I got to say, it's still role playing. Yeah, I guess it's still playing. That's still hard for me. I always have to relate that to the equivalent of in English saying, you know, what's up? And if someone was, you know, like, what's up? And they're literally like looking above their head every time, like, right now the clouds are on you or whatever. I'm like, no, that's not what I mean. That's the exact same concept of, you know, trifanama. So, but for me, it's still somehow still trying to get through my head, and I'm still role playing that one. Yeah. Another part I liked about this paper, she talks about things like the involvement of the learner in the learning process. And it's really that the more we involve, and this is very much linked to role playing, but like involving the learner in that process, it helps the learners develop a more positive view of the language and culture. Another part she talks about in this paper is about the presentation of information in a particular way to the learners has been shown to have an impact on the learner's interest in the language. Now, this does make a lot of sense to me, and I'm sure you as well, John. This is something we really focus on with that Manner Companion.
Okay, so you're talking about how we very carefully craft our stories to be at a certain level and to stretch readers' abilities just the right amount so that they can follow the story and enjoy it, but also pick up vocabulary and start to internalize grammar forms.
Yes, but not just that. We are also trying to find interesting stories. We're not just doing that with any old story, but we're trying to find a story that we think people are really going to like, and we take a lot of time crafting that as well. So overall, I think those are kind of like the two sides of that same coin of like, hey, what's that message? What kind of content are people consuming as far as like language learning content? Is it kind of level appropriate? Is something that's comprehensible to them? And also, is it something that's like interesting, something that they're actually interested in?
Okay, and the paper mentions that this is the form of teaching that a lot of teachers are most familiar and comfortable with.
I think you're right, John. A lot of emphasis and focus is given to this aspect in the classroom and in language learning materials. It's just kind of like, hey, can we make sure it's appropriate for them? And I think more emphasis should be given to like the interest level, like, you know, hey, is this kind of cool or interesting to the target learner? But yeah, these are important points that are brought up.
So then the next point that the author brings up is message content and dissonance. And what she's talking about here is, you know, the teacher is trying to help you learn the language and learn about the target language culture, but you might have some dissonance in the form of preconceptions. Preconceptions about the language or the people that you're learning about.
So, John, I didn't really get into this part. So maybe you could break this down a little bit, what she's really meaning by this dissonance.
All right, well, let me give you a quote here. In order for students to appreciate and understand new cultures, it is crucial for them to identify and voice their present thoughts and feelings about that culture and about their own culture, their preconceptions. In so doing, it may be necessary for them to identify the sources for these thoughts and feelings in order for the relativity to be recognized. So the writer is advocating for people to actually acknowledge the preconceptions if they're learning Chinese in an environment where 80% of the population is kind of anti-China. It's actually helpful to recognize that and to think about how that might be affecting you.
I like this. This is really good because oftentimes I have individuals I'll meet or associate with on a professional or a personal level. And, you know, they learn about me, my background to some extent, and they oftentimes will have many questions or just comments, not always questions, but comments about China and Chinese culture. And I appreciate them. And they're not all positive, as you may guess, but it gives me an opportunity to discuss those things and to oftentimes identify, a misunderstanding, or I think it's actually, this happens because of that. And I think most people walk away with a little bit better of an understanding, and I hopefully a less of a negative view of those who have negative views. Perhaps those are tempered at least a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny. This kind of reminds me of counseling. Like if you have these negative feelings, but you never acknowledge them, you never think about them, you never talk about them, then you might not realize what power they have over you. But if you acknowledge that, yeah, there are these preconceptions that maybe aren't totally fair, but this is what they are, then that can actually help you to get over that. And then your attitude can possibly experience a change, you know, toward the target language culture. And hey, great things could happen.
And John, I think something I'd like to bring up on this point is I think someone might construe my just statement there that, hey, you know, I'm a panda hugger, right? You know, I just...
Is that what they call you?
That's a term out there, you know, for people who are like, oh, you know, China can do nothing wrong. You're defending all of them. I don't think it is necessary to be, quote unquote, a panda hugger and still, you know, like appreciate and resolve or deal with some of the difficult issues, geopolitical issues between the West and China. I think more about it is just understanding it in a very clear way. And sometimes when people bring up some pet issues or some things that are in popular media about China and perceptions, I can be like, well, yep, that's a problem. It's more about acknowledging sometimes those differences or things that maybe aren't easily reconciled and just saying, yes, this is an issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's better to acknowledge and then to have a discussion on the issue than to just be like, okay, and then just walk away, right?
Exactly. Or, oh, that's not how it is. Or, oh, no, it's not that bad. Or, oh, that you're just being, you know, brainwashed or whatever. Because I've seen it on both ends of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this point is actually really important. It's especially salient right now in our current time and culture. People, their perception of Chinese culture. And, you know, John, I have not been back to China for a few years. I really want to hope to make it back this year.
How long has it been?
It's been 4 years, John. I can't believe it. It was ever since COVID hit, man.
How long has it been since you hugged a panda, Jared?
Oh, man, it's been too long. So yeah, I was there January 2020. I left a week before COVID hit, started closing down Shanghai. If you remember back then, that was crazy, crazy stuff. But I think this whole cultural aspect is really important. And I'll say this to John, I have some little more personal experience in this area, is in my town here in Utah, Utah has a very robust dual immersion program. Mm. We have about 80 Chinese dual immersion programs in Utah. Utah has about 4 million people. So it's like 1% of the United States population, but we have more Chinese dual immersion programs than any other state, which is pretty crazy. But in my town, they start the dual immersion program at first grade and enrollment has dropped the last couple of years. And the school board was like, hey, you guys got to bring this up or else you're going to lose the program. And so with some other parents who were very interested, we banded together. We tried real hard to recruit for the incoming first grade class for this coming up school year. And they said we need to get at least 45. By the deadline, we were only able to get 30. And it was really troubling. And the week after we didn't hit that deadline, they sent an email out saying, is anyone interested in the Spanish dual immersion instead? We could start that. And within a day or two, they had 60 people register for it. And I was like, wow. And really what we were facing here at this time in our area was just kind of a negative perception towards Chinese culture. And it really impacted people's willingness to put their kids into a Chinese dual immersion program. Mm. And so that's a sad story, what happened here. But those are some of the things that can happen and have happened and unfortunately are happening due to negative perceptions between two cultures.
Well, to play devil's advocate, though, couldn't it be that money is kind of tight and that Spanish is viewed as more practical?
Yeah, that definitely is one of the things that some parents had said. They saw Spanish as more practical. Money was not an issue because this is in public school, so there was no extra cost for doing that.
Mm.
But we did get some perceptions from parents who specifically said, I'm not putting my kids in Chinese, and who expressed negative political views and gave that as a reason for not putting their kids in the Chinese program, but they were willing to put them in Spanish. So, hey, at the end of the day, at least the kids are getting an opportunity to learn another language. I think that's really important. I think it's sad, though, that in this instance here in our community, we're losing this Chinese. And that's not happening all around the state, but that happened here in my local smaller community.
Yeah, and here in Shanghai, my company, All Set Learning, you know, we have teachers here in Shanghai that teach some of our clients face-to-face, in person, but there really just aren't as many foreigners in Shanghai as there used to be. And it's really a bummer. These teachers are so committed to helping foreigners understand Chinese language and culture, and there just aren't as many now as there used to be.
The argument that goes out is actually due to tense and challenging geopolitical relations right now, it's almost more important than ever to reach across cultural boundaries. Don't have to agree or see eye to eye politically, but as we were saying earlier in the podcast, it's hard to hate up close, right? And once you can start understanding different things, it reduces the risk of, I guess, miscalculation, right? And I think citizen diplomacy is a real thing and it's important.
And you're in it for the long haul, you might find that your fluency in Chinese and your understanding of the culture ends up being much more important than you imagined, because at this point in time, there are relatively fewer people doing that. So the people that are doing it are even more important.
Yeah, and I would be interested to hear from our listeners, how many of you have had experiences, because you're learning Chinese, how many of you have had experiences where you've had friends or coworkers or other individuals approach you and have questions about China? And at times, perhaps you've been able to, I guess, offer a different point of view than what that individual might have because of your experience in learning the language.
And we'd also be interested in hearing from Chinese teachers. Have any of you been brave enough to take the advice in this paper and like talk about the preconceptions about Chinese culture and opening that can of worms in the classroom? Did it have positive effects or did no one want to talk about it or admit to anything? I'm quite curious about that.
So yeah, reach out to us. You can email us at feedback@mandarincompanion.com. We also on mandarincompanion.com, we have a feedback form. You can send us some ideas or whatever. You can also reach out to us on social media. Hey, we'd love to collect some of your ideas and experiences. And I think that might be an interesting follow-up here to this episode.
Yes, please do. But Jared, before we wrap up, I have two special points I want to make.
Okay, let's hear, John.
So one of them is, we're talking about an academic paper here, and it's kind of long, you know, like 12 pages, academic writing. So naturally, what do you think?
Maybe we could use GPT to summarize this paper.
There you go, ChatGPT. Why read the whole paper when you could just run it through ChatGPT? Okay, so of course I did that because I've read quite a few academic papers in my day. And as much as I love it, I wanted to save a little time. But man, let me tell you, ChatGPT really destroyed all the interesting points about this paper. Like, I started reading it. It's okay. Run it through ChatGPT. Read the outline. I'm like, I don't even want to read this paper anymore. But then I went back and read it anyway. You know, it's only 12 pages. And it was quite interesting. So That was an important experience for me to go through that.
John, I have to say something about that. I think one of the reasons why is because this paper does not have text embedded. It's images. It's a big image file.
But it did get the content and it just didn't get the interesting things.
Well, I guess ChatGPT is just not good at everything, at least not yet.
Okay. And then the other point that I wanted to make is a callback to episode 21 from 2019.
Wow. You're reaching back in the archives, John.
Yeah, it's an episode called How Important is Chinese Culture When Learning Chinese? Do you remember what we said, Jared?
I remember my takeaway on this.
What was it?
That you don't have to learn Chinese culture to learn the language, but it really will enhance your ability to communicate.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly what we meant by that, but the truth is you can't not learn culture when you're learning a language. And this is one of the things that this paper really hits home, is that you have to learn culture. And whether you're learning it implicitly or explicitly, it has to happen somehow. But don't feel like you have to read a 200-page book on Chinese culture just to have a few conversations in China over a one-week vacation.
I got to say, I got one more hot take on that one.
Okay.
I was thinking like, all right, what if you wanted to learn Klingon or Elvish, right? Do you really need to learn about the culture of elves and Klingons to learn that language? I know they're not fully complete languages, but yeah, you know, you're probably going to be interested in that culture a bit.
Well,
I think
if you're going to their kingdom, you don't want them to kill you or something, right? I feel like the stakes are higher.
Like if you don't say the right thing at Klingon at the right time, you know, you might find yourself in a bad situation.
You might get challenged to a battle in the arena or something.
Yeah. You're a Trekkie, I guess you would know.
Sorta.
Yeah, you're a Trekkie. You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. My name is Jared Turner, co-founder of the Mandarin Companion Graded Reader Series. My co-host is John Patterson, co-founder of Mandarin Companion, founder of All Set Learning, the Chinese Grammar Wiki, and Sinalspice.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe. Take a moment to text or message this episode to a friend or share it on social media. It really helps us to reach more people in their language journey. You can leave us a review on iTunes or reach out to us at mandarincompanion.com or find us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. You can find our Chinese Graded Reader series on Amazon, iBooks, Google Play, or wherever you get your books. Apologies to John Cena, we just ran out of time. The You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor is Jasper Chua. And of course, thanks to my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Paston. See you next time.